6368 Reel 8.
Mr. Parks file, Reel 8. Now, we're talking about the various convoys and incidents, and one thing you want to make clear is that a lot of the time nothing was happening, it was a matter of routine. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Want to address some comments?
But all battles are like that. I mean, they don't last very long. When I was living in Scotland, I used to go around the battlefields. I like history. And the Battle of Killiecrankie, for instance, lasted 20 minutes. When you're wielding a great claymore, it weighs God knows how much, you shouldn't get it had enough, you know. And these battles don't last very long. Most of the time at sea, it's just sheer boredom and we got away. I mean, we did decoy convoys down to, and we used to take these old tramp steamers out, which had full of ballast, stone, I suppose, and down as far as the Azores, and then back up into the Arctic Circle, zigzagging across all the main shipping routes, trying to lure the wolf packs, the U-boats, away from the main shipping routes. We don't seem to be very successful because we never got a U-boat, but and most of the U-boats never sank any of our ships during the war.
You didn't do much actual fighting in the sense of anti-submarine depth charges and things because you were lucky.
It's a big place, the Atlantic. I mean, we did have one possible thing when we dropped those depth charges when the lights went out, but it was never recorded as a sinking. By the Admiralty didn't accept it anyway. I think we put it in as one. Now, most of the time, it's sheer bloody boredom.
One time it wasn't was when you missed ship in Newfoundland, February 1940.
Ah, yes.
Tell us, and this is the story of HMS Fervain, which I know you want to deal with carefully. So, tell us in the way you want to tell us what exactly happened.
We came into St. John's, Newfoundland. In the Gardner, my Captain Class frigate, and we couldn't tie on the jetty. We had to tie on a buoy out in the harbour, and it was just at the time when the weather was changing for the worse for winter, and St. John's gets flooded up in the winter. You can't get in there, so I believe. I can't remember that, but anyway, I went to I took the Liberty boat, and I was due for a few hours leave till midnight, and I went ashore. I went to the YMCA. And I don't know what I did there, but probably played cards or did something anyway. And had cups of tea and cake and things that they used to supply. And when I came, and it was snowing quite heavily when I went in. And when I came out, it was really snowing hard. So I made my way down to the jetty to get the Liberty boat, and because I had to be back on board by midnight. And it wasn't running. The weather was too rough. You know, there was too much snow coming down. It was bloody freezing. So I didn't want to be caught out by reporting late. I went on the nearest ship, which was tied up at the jetty, which was a corvette, a flower-class corvette called the Vervain. And I reported to the officer of the watch, and he signalled across to the gardener to say that I had reported in and therefore I wasn't adrift. And so the gardener had obviously signalled back, okay, send him across in the morning, or come and collect him in the morning. Well, when the morning came, and it was really rough, there's no way that Liberty boat was going to come across, and we all had to sail, and I sailed as it took passage on the Vervain, which I knew quite well. I'd taken photographs of it earlier, another trip, and I didn't know anybody on it, though, but I went down to the mess deck, Stoker's mess deck, and I slept on the table. Anyway, we came on this convoy, and when we got, after a day, like it took a couple of weeks, whatever, when we got to near Northern Ireland.
Now, can I ask, were you doing duties?
No.
Just taking passage?
Yeah, just taking passage. Sorry. Although, if there'd been action stations, they would have given me something to do. Nobody is idle when there's action stations. You've always got something, damage control, you're doing that with a team like that, in case you get any damage. There's plenty to do, if necessary. Bloody thing, I was sick as a dog, because it's a different ship. Every ship is different. You get used to one ship being seasick, and then you change ships and you start all over again. So I was being sick. and those little buggers were old as well. They weren't meant for deep sea voyages, they were meant for coastal work. And they're terrible little things, these sour cask cornets. However, when we got across, what happened was the convoy split up, the southern half of the convoy, the northern half, up to Gwynedd or whatever, and down to Southampton. Now, it just has to happen that if the escort in the group had the southern one the previous trip, he would get the northern one the next trip, because he'd have an extra day's leave. The crew would have an extra day's leave, or a day less, depending on which one. And the gardener and the vervain were both, the gardener was due for the shorter trip to go to Greenwich and back to Liverpool, gets in a day earlier, we have an extra day's leave. But we were in the wrong positions. The gardener was on the south side and the vervain on the south side, and we had to change positions. And as we changed positions, we got hit. Now, by a U-boat, and I've got the U-boat's number.
Yes, help you, that's U1208 in this, yes. In this brief note you've got.
Yes, 1208, that's right. Which was sunk 2-3 days later in the Bristol Channel. This was all hands. I don't remember getting out. I don't remember where I was on the ship at the time. I don't remember getting into the water. I don't remember. I've tried and tried and tried, and I cannot remember how I got into the water.
And you don't remember the torpedo strike or any of that?
No, you don't hear the one that hits you. Well, that's the theory anyway. I certainly didn't hear anything. I found out I wasn't asleep. I don't know where I was. But I don't remember getting into the water. All I know was that I was absolutely freezing to death. I thought, and I realised, of course, what had happened. And I was on a Carly float with 5 other men. And with 5 other men. And suddenly there was a loud noise. And the megaphone said, "We're going to try and pick you up." And we're all sitting on the edge of this Carly float. And the other chaps about, but weren't making any attempt to get to us, and we couldn't get to them. And this ship was coming. And I could hear this voice saying, they said something about a grappling net. And then I saw this ship coming. Now, when you're low in the water, when you see a ship coming towards you, that looks a mile high. It's unbelievable. And I think most of the lads, if they did die, died of hypothermia.
How bad was it for you in that?
Well, Carly float. I was just wet, that's all. I don't remember swimming to it, but I must have swum to it.
And how cold?
It. Well, it was indescribable. I just felt cold, numb. And they said, anyway, this tannoy said, get your arms through the grappling net. What do you call it, net? What do you call those nets at the other side? Grappling net.
No. Well, that sounds right. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so we looked at one another. And the ship slowed down, it didn't stop, but very, very, it was moving. And they had this very wide net over the side, heavy boat net. And as it came alongside, it was very difficult, but it was quite wide. We all go onto it anyway. And they were shouting at the top, start climbing, well, you couldn't move. Get your. This is a shout. Push and get your grab hold of it, start climbing, they were shouting at the top. And because the ship was getting going faster again. And none of us could move at all, we just couldn't move. And in the end, they pulled the whole bloody thing up with us on it as well.
And that was the John Deere?
And that was Chip Foods and John Deere. Well, it had anything to do with John Deere tractors in America. I don't know, because there's a farm tractor called John Deere. Maybe.
But it was a big freighter.
Yes. And
what state were you in when you were gone, finally got on the deck?
Well, I just lay there. And I heard some shouting from the water. One chap was shouting, taxi. And we just went straight through them. We wouldn't pick up anybody else. And that's why I feel so guilty. I didn't tell anybody, because we were doing regular trips to Gibraltar, and it so happened that John Deere was going to North Africa or somewhere, so it was passing Gibraltar, and so I got dumped off there and put in the hospital. And just to see if my lungs were all right, because one of the problems was oil.
In the water?
Yeah, and luckily I hadn't taken any in. I had quite a bit on me, but I hadn't taken any, and it hadn't been a lot of oil. And I must tell you, I was in hospital in Gibraltar, and so it just fitted in nicely with my regular trips I was doing to Gibraltar and Newfoundland. That's why I didn't tell my wife. And
so you didn't tell anyone this had happened?
No, I didn't tell my parents or anybody, because I felt so guilty.
I don't
know why I did, but I did, and I feel guilty today. I don't know why. And you're all sure you could have done something, I don't know. Anyway, I was in hospital in gym, and it was so funny. There was a chap in the bed next to me. I don't know, in a couple of days for a check-up. Oh, I had a little bit of metal that they took out of my leg and the shin, but only a bit superficial. And the chap next to me was a Cockney Barrow boy. He's underneath the screen. You know, in those days, you had an enema before you went down for the operation. Clean out your bowels. And there aren't any fine things, finances like having curtains around the bed there in the neighbour hospital. And the men and male nurses. And this male nurse came with a big thing of hot water and soapy water. And a big squirter, you know. Like one of those car hooters, old-fashioned car hooter things. And he sucked up a lot of this soapy water and started to pump it into this chap. He said, saying this, how many miles did you should go on this? And he said, you'll soon find out. And he said, well, did I get a bad bedpan? He said, no, the lavatory at the end of the ward. And he suddenly decided that he meant to go quick, and he ran like mad down the ward, out through the door, and then there was a commotion and a bang and a crashing. And he came back in looking very sorry for himself 10 minutes later. And he said, you'll never guess what. I said, no, what? He said, I got my hand on the door of the heads, they call them in the Navy. Got my hand on the door of the heads, and the arsehole caved in. It sounded so funny the way he told it. He died.
Well, he died in the operation?
He died on the operation table, yeah. He was a big fat man. He was full of stories, and they were so funny the way he told them. He said, have you ever been to Malta? I said, no. He said, well, you know, the when there was an air raid on Valletta, apparently, the caves, they used to, the Maltese, he said, they could run like hell, he said, because the caves were used as air raid shelters, so I understand. And he said, those Maltese, they could run like hell, he said, they ran for these caves, he said, they ran so fast, he said, but they didn't beat me, he said, I went so bloody fast that I had to turn around and pull my arsehole in afterwards. He told so many of these funny stories, you know, it was the way he told them.
anyway. What was wrong with him?
I never found out. I know, he seemed all right to me. I don't understand it. I don't know what was wrong with him. They wouldn't tell me.
Now, you were in the hospital two or three days, Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, not very long, yeah. It's just a check up.
And then what?
Well, then it so happened that the gardener was coming to Gibraltar on the next trip, so I waited in Gibraltar till it came. And I joined the gardener again. And off we went back to the normal routine.
That was in March you rejoined, according to these, but...
Yeah, must have.
When you went back on, how did it affect your nerve, having been sunk once? I mean, people often say that once they've been sunk, their nerves never quite the same. How did you feel? Before and after? I mean, had you worried about it beforehand? What were you like afterwards?
Just quiet.
Do you think it affected you?
It does affect you, doesn't it? I mean, these things do. It's a human tragedy. It's the individual, you know. When you know people and so on, that chap affected me more than anything else, I think. Although the chap out in taxi didn't help. You know, he was obviously, you know, he was in taxi, and you know, we just seemed on past him and some others, I think.
Did you find yourself more nervous? I mean, you know, worrying about it happening again.
No. You don't when you're young, you know. It's a peculiar thing. I don't understand it really. I mean, it just so happened that it all fitted in nice. Why I didn't tell anyone was this terrible feeling of guilt all the time. And yet, why was I feeling guilty? I don't know. That's because I'd got off it and some I hadn't got off it.
Now, any other instance? I mean, that was quite late in the war.
Yeah, it was late in the war.
Anything else happened before? I mean, the next thing you've got was the U-532 surrendered to you. I presume that was after the war ended.
Ah, yes, the war ended.
Was there anything else before that?
Now, I've got the signal here in the office, which shows the exact position we were, so many degrees north and so many degrees south, or whatever it is, where we were when the war ended.
Now, were there any sort of celebrations? How did you react?
No, there wasn't any celebrations at all. We just carried on what we were doing. I suppose it was a feeling of relief. I don't really remember. I don't think there was. When you're young, you just take things, you accept things as they are. And I was, you know, I went back on the garden and no one said anything to me. And just carried on. And then the war ended. And just that time, we... got this enormous submarine. Now, I've got the newspaper coming somewhere, I must find it.
Doesn't matter now, tell us what happened. What was the story? This was a U-532. Now, yes. It's an unusual U-boat as far as I know. It's a cargo. Tell us all about it.
Well, this surrendered, this U-boat, and it was a big thing. It was a cargo carrier. I'd never heard of a cargo carrier before. U-boat cargo carrier. And it had a false keel, which was full of wolfram. It came from Japan, certainly. I've still got some souvenirs that were given to me, Japanese souvenirs, from the Germans on board. And we took it into Liverpool, and then we went up to Bow-in-Furness. We took it up to Bow-in-Furness. It was the only dry dock. Bow-in-Furness is a submarine building yard.
Now, how did you manage the surrender? I mean, how was it done?
Well...
Did anyone board her or anything?
Yes, it was boarded. What happened was, they needed a boarding party. And we had to cut... They needed someone from the engine room, someone from the... navigator went aboard, and so on. But before we went aboard, we had to cut cars for it. That was it. Who was going to be boarding party? So Muggins here gets the job of being on the boarding party. And the skipper was going to send over the navigator, and with instructions to this German that is to follow us on the surface, just follow us on the surface, apparently. We were going to take it into Liverpool. And I was one of the boarding party. Well, he gave me a Sterling submachine gun. I had no clue. I'd never fired one. I didn't know what it was all about. And the skipper had warned us that these fanatics, these Nazis, might very easily drop a Mills bomb into our boat as we went alongside. So be extra careful, that pleased me no end. And we went across anyway on the whaler, and the Germans helped us on board, and I was supposed to go in the engine room, that was my job, and keep guard on the Germans down in the engine room. Well, a submarine, you think the captain cast figure roll with nothing to a submarine on the surface in heavy swell. I was sick all over again, was I sick? And I was down in the engine room on this bloody U-boat, and I was so sick the Germans were sorry for me. And they got me a cup of coffee and dinners, whatnot. And the German I was supposed to be guarding picked up my gun and showed me how it worked without a clue. And I couldn't care then, I was so bloody sick again. And anyway, we followed it into Liverpool. It followed us into Liverpool. And then we took it to Baron Furness. I've already said this, have I?
No.
Oh, then we escorted it to Baron Furness because it was the only dry dock that was big enough to take this bloody great thing to come from the Orient, apparently.
But what was it carrying?
It was carrying, well, it was, I knew it was carrying wolfram, which I think is a substance for hardening metal. It's got another name, much more common name, I can't think what it is. And anyway, we got into Liverpool, and we were the majority of the crew had to go into captivity. Still, although the war was ended, the Germans, and I got on very well, we all got on quite well with these young Germans, and they were due to go leave for the U-boat, it was tied up at the quay in Liverpool, and they were handing over to the army. Well, there was a bloody army sergeant, major or somebody, who was at the end of the gangway, and as the Germans went ashore, he was throwing their bloody suitcases into the water, so you don't need that where you're going, and we'd let them take their stuff with them, you know. So we're a bit peeved about this. This bloody soldier who's kicking their belongings into the water. Anyway, that's just an incident.
But you didn't stay on the garden along then, did you?
No, we went up to Baron Furness, and we had the U-boat went into dry dock, and it was open to the public. The public could go on board and have a look at it. And then, I can't remember what happened after that, because I remember being sent, paid off, and sent down to Chatham Barracks. I got 2 weeks infantry leave.
How did you feel about leaving the garden? I mean, you know, it's been your life for 2 years.
I was bloody glad.
You were pleased?
Not half. I was really pleased, yeah. Oh, I went to the deaf end of Chatham, and my word, you should have seen it there. It was crowded with thousands of men, all these ships being paid off. Nowhere to sleep, sleeping on the floor, putting their hands on the floor, trying out anywhere. It was really absolute chaos. And I'll tell you a funny story about that. When payday came along, the big drill shed there was full of thousands of men in queues. You had to get to your, I was a P for file, P's to whatever, and you get into that bit. Well, my name being File, P-F-E-I-L, I used to get called Pile very often, or Perfeel, or Peel, or Pete Fiend sometimes. And I was queuing up. Now, in the Navy, when you get to the pay table, you take your hat off, it's tradition, you put it on the table, and the paymaster puts your money on top of your hat. Well, I was getting £2 a fortnight. Well, I was in this long queue, waiting hours to shuffle along to get the money, £2 a fortnight. And when I got to they shouted out, Pile. Without thinking, I automatically went to the table, because apparently the man called Pile wasn't there, but I thought they meant File. And to my amazement, instead of putting £2 on my hat, they put £40 on. Now, £40 in 1945 was a lot of money. It really was a lot of money. And you couldn't say, hey, this is too much or anything, because the thousands, they move on, you know, they're trying to get through all these thousands and pay off all these people, pay them rather. So I took the £40 and went back into the barracks and got a few lads. I said, we're on the piss tonight. And we went out into Chatham that night, and evening leave, night leave. and about five of us there, and we had a few drinks, to say the least. And the next day, I was called up, Prior Oil, wherever, called up. They said, "You've got £40 of us to pay out, which you shouldn't have. Can I have it back, please?" I said, "No, we spent it." They were a bit cross about that, to say the least. And they stopped my wages for the rest of the time I was in the Navy. But while I was there, I got this 2 weeks infantry leave and got this money and so on. And when I came back from two weeks leave, I got a draft ship for the Far East. Because the war had finished in Europe, but it was still going on in VJJ hadn't come yet. And as I was did training on landing craft.
Were you sent to the Erebus first?
No, that was after.
Okay, sorry.
I left it now.
So you're telling me about the draft to the...
I've got 2 weeks infancy leave. When I got back, I got a draft for the Far East. And I thought, and another 2 weeks leave. And I thought, my God, I wasn't happy about this at all. So I turned around and went back home again with this other 2 weeks leave. And I got back late, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I had to throw stones up at the bedroom window to wake my wife up to come open the door. And I told her why I was back home again. And we didn't have a very happy leave, I must say. We worried about going out to the Far East to invade Japan. I thought, there's no way I'm coming back from that. So it was pretty miserable. And then while I was packing bags waiting for the draft, after this leave, they dropped the atom bomb. And so all drafts were cancelled. So I was very lucky, really. And that was that. And then they wanted people in the army, in the Pioneer Corps, apparently, for doing lots of work to do in Europe. And the Navy was overloaded with personnel they didn't want. So we all lined up in a drill shed, and the chief petty officer came along and said, "All right, all the lot from there to there, you're in the Royal Engineers or something." And they missed me by about five people out of all these thousand. So I never did get put into the engineers. So I was pleased about that. And so I got a draft then to a ship called the Erebus. Now, I thought, well, what the hell is Erebus? And I discovered it was an old 1914-18 monitor, which had two 16-inch guns and had been at D-Day, shelling the beaches, and so on the beaches, the Germans. Two 16-inch guns, and the shells weighed a ton each. They say it was like firing a Volkswagen through the air. And I was to go, they had it in Chatham as a training ship. And I was on the steam hydraulics and lifting the shells, which weighed a ton each, on a hydraulic lift up to the breech of the gun. And they were training people to use it. That's how I got that job. And it was a bloody awful thing, because you couldn't, it's a very old ship, and you couldn't go below decks without bending down. You couldn't stand up upright. You had to bend down all the time going along the decks, below the upper deck. And until you sat down, you could straighten yourself. And that wasn't a lot of fun. And anyway, from that I got sent in later on, got sent into barracks to get demobbed into Collingwood Block.
Well, that would be 46. I mean, according to papers, you were on the Erebus nearly a year. Well, 8 months.
Yeah, I was.
That was whereabouts was she?
In the Chatham Basin, in Chatham Dockyard.
And you were on the gun.
I was on the steam hydraulics for the 16-inch guns.
And what did that involve?
It was complicated because they were fired by Marines. Not by the Navy ratings, and I just had to learn all about how you work these hydraulics. Pretty great things they were underneath.